Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at brag-worthy prices at your DSW store or DSW.com.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Nick, just circling back to the offensive line and the moving parts that you guys have, a lot of decisions to make there. And as you mentioned, a lot of guys that can play multiple positions. You're also installing a new offense, or at least there's a new offensive coordinator who's going to be installing his offense. How challenging is it to install a new offense while having all those moving parts going along, all that evaluation going on the offensive line?
Well, actually, there's some benefits because essentially everybody's kind of starting at the same ground level. Mm-hmm. So everybody's kind of starting from scratch. So it's a first opportunity for the players, whether it's the offensive line, the skill players, there's a certain level of transition. So this is what the spring is for. The focus is on system installation and the focus for the team. And DeMeco talked about this the other day. Like, phase two is really about mastering your fundamentals. Because in the end, everything is going to go back to your basic fundamentals and techniques. So if you can execute those things, I mean, not to like transition to a different sport, but essentially the Cavs lost the game last night because they couldn't block out after a free throw. Hmm. So everybody wants to talk about all these other things, but in the end, it comes back to basic principles, blocking, tackling, fundamentals. Which is, that's what phase two, that's where the primary emphasis is. And the fact that we're all kind of starting at the same point, there's actually a lot of advantages. You don't have to worry about anything that's happened in the past. You don't have to worry about, well, we did it this way somewhere else on this different team. Well, we did it this way last year. None of that is really germane. What really matters is, where are we right now? What's the focus for the day? What's the emphasis point? What are the coaching points? So that's the job of the player to internalize that, to have an understanding, and then focus on your fundamentals. So when you have to apply those in critical situations, you have something that you can resort back to. So honestly, it's actually a positive, and hopefully we can take advantage of our opportunities here over the next 4 to 6 weeks, or however many we have.
Okay, you asked for it, Nick, in one of your press conferences during the draft. You requested a definition of drafting for need. So I did. I went to where I go for 90% of my sports takes these days, my hottest takes, I went to AI. So,
ChatGPT, or which mode are you using?
There's a lot of tools
out there.
It costs me more per month than I should be paying. That's
paying for that, or is that a
no? That's a gem. Okay. This is why I have my YouTube channel specifically, so I can I have business expenses that I can write off. Okay. This is Gemini. This is what Gemini defines. And I'll be honest with you. Gemini sounds like they're kind of down on drafting for need. But the basic definition they give is, when an NFL general manager drafts for need instead of best player available, it means they prioritize selecting a player who fills a specific positional weakness on their current roster, even if there's another player available with a higher overall talent grade according to their scouting evaluations.
That's Google's product out there, folks, just in case anybody's interested in that, I believe. So,
the GM.
Did you find
GM
that explanation useful?
I don't know, because I don't even want to ask you the question, because you've answered this a million times. I guess the biggest, if we were to kind of build on some of the answers you've given us and other people about this, it's, you know, and from talking to other people, kind of the way teams construct their boards, You've talked about how when you look at players, you do have to look at their role in the offense or in the defense, and that the way it's been explained to me before is that you're going best player available can also, it does have to include, all right, does this guy A, fit our scheme, and B, is there a place for him? But it's like, so you're not necessarily veering off of your board on draft day, but your board is going to look different than other teams' boards who already maybe have like three all-pro wide receivers. Is that fair?
Well, I would say even in that case, let's just say you had three all-pro receivers, you're not going to grade the player any differently as mm-hmm. you would as if you didn't have that player. So I think
how we've always tried
to look at it is just if you're just starting from scratch, forget about the current composition of the team. Said player, here's the grade, here's the role that we potentially foresee for that player, and then you're comparing that to another position. At some point, you are going to work horizontally across the board, and then if you have to make a decision about equally graded level players, then ultimately you just have to make a choice about, you can only pick one, and you pick that player, and then you move on. So I'd say the current composition of your team doesn't necessarily affect the grade and the evaluation of that said player. Ultimately, then it comes down to the team's choice or decision about adding that player to your team. I would say just not looking at too many other teams, but in the case of, I would say, the Ravens, like there's an example of they probably took one of the best football players that was still on the board. He was more than likely their highest graded level player. They have Kyle, like they have a good secondary. Now, here's another player that is probably going to fit in fairly well. How they use him, how they deploy him, who knows? I mean, we'll find out because we're going to play Baltimore. But I would say, like, there's an example of, well, we have Kyle Hamilton. Do we draft Malachi Starks? Well, if the goal is to try to build a good football team with good football players, understanding you're probably going to need everybody at some point in time, then you go ahead and make the decision. And again, I'm not like speaking on behalf of Eric,
right,
but I would just say when you look at that situation, that looks like an example of, man, that was the best football player that was on the board. So they were looking up there going, you know what? That makes a lot of sense. So let's add him to the team. And we have a lot of respect for the way the Ravens run their, I would say, organization and program. Buffalo, I would say, operates very similarly. So again, and everybody probably has a little bit different philosophy, but I think there's been other general managers who have made comments probably similar to mine. And I don't think that's just lip service. I think that's the reality of it. And that's kind of, you have to be careful of if you draft a player because you just feel like, A, we have this gaping hole and we can't miss out, even though he's graded a little bit lower than another player. I mean, it's a tough way to operate.
You just got to, is it fair to say that the need is a tiebreaker at the very least? Like if you got like equally graded players, if you got those three all-pro wide receivers and there's a wide receiver and let's say you need a defensive end or, you really want pass rushers, you're going to take the pass rusher.
At some point you just have to make a decision what you feel makes the most sense for the team at the present time. So if there's a tiebreaker, maybe there's something that maybe leans it one way or the other. But I would say by and large, you're just take the player, take the evaluation. Do we have conviction? And is there, I would say, a little bit of a organizational conviction on the player? So it's top to bottom. It's just not what the coaches think. It's not what the scouts think. It's kind of a collective. Here's how we feel. We're comfortable with it. All right, ready, go, and then move on to the next player. So it's always kind of an interesting discussion, especially around draft time. So, free agency is kind of its own entity in that discussion and everything that goes on there. Then you get to the draft. It's all tied together. And ultimately, our goal is to try to make good, sound decisions that are the best for the organization and just try to fill the building with as many football players as possible. And then ultimately, once we get them in the building, we have zero control over it. The players are going to ultimately determine who plays, how big a role they have based on their performance.
Nick Caserio joining us on the show. Hey, Nick, along those lines, just sticking with wide receiver, from your standpoint in terms of roster building, how are you viewing Tank Dell right now? We know he's recovering from the injury and he's in good spirits and it sounds like the surgeries have been very successful. But how are you viewing him in that, that 2-year window that you talk about all the time?
Yeah, I mean, right now, no timetable. I think the focus is on his rehab. So whenever Tank, I think D'Amico was asked about this the other day as well, mm-hmm. and I mean, his comments are probably similar to mine. Like, whenever Tank is available and he's ready, then he's ready and he'll be out there. So Tank's a good football player. He's proven that he can help our team. So right now, he's focused on his individual health and just doing the best he can on a day-to-day basis. And then when he's ready, you know, he'll be out there. Tank can certainly help us. He's proven that he can help us over the course of time. So, you know, kind of take it one day at a time and then just kind of evaluate and monitor his progress as we go. But he's been great to have around. He's got a great attitude. He's been a good player. So, you know, we'll kind of see how it goes moving forward.
What I was somebody had asked me a question about Jalen Noel the other day, and he asked how he compares to Wes Welker. So I went back up, and you know, I know you love the combine stats as much as I do. And I was
Wes
wondering,
is already
like,
mad at me after Wes is already mad at me after my comments the first night of the draft when I talked about I love Wes. So it was actually meant complimentary because I'd asked about size and I talked about Wes being 4'1".
Well, yeah, you said
honestly,
he's 4'1". Yeah.
Honestly, I'm looking at I like looking at these spider charts that show all the measurables, and Wes Welker went undrafted originally. And I'm looking at this, and if somebody had told me, oh, yeah, the Patriots traded a second and a seventh rounder for this guy with this athletic profile.
Lunatics.
Oh, my God.
Well, he didn't – if I don't have it in front of me, I think he ran like 4'7". He didn't run
4'7". He has,
but
like,
his
short space quickness,
lateral agility was actually an area that stood out, and you saw that in his play.
Yeah, yeah, and he was very, very small, and like so. You look at Jalen Noel. Jalen Noel's a smaller guy, but he tested very well, and he's got all those measurables. I guess with Jalen Noel, how do you make up for like Wes Welker did or anybody else? Like aside from the speed element. Like Jalen Noel's got a smaller catch radius anatomically. So what's the difference for guys that make it in the NFL, like Jalen Noel, if he makes it?
There's no one particular formula, I would say. Seth.
Yeah, I guess specifically to Jalen Noel, like what are the things other than the athleticism that make up for it?
Yeah, I would say his toughness, his overall instinctiveness, his playing style. He's got good speed, I would say, for his position. He ran a good time. So, I mean, again, sometimes the time speed and the game speed don't always match up. I would say in his particular case, he has good speed. You know, he has good time speed. So those two kind of marry up. He's got strong hands, even though he's smaller. He's not like that small. He's a pretty sturdy, I would say, rocky, kind of blocked up kind of dude. Honestly, his build is similar in some respects to Christian. They're not Christian Kirk. They're not small players. They might be quote-unquote shorter, but they're not necessarily small players. They might play big for their size. I would say, like, going back to my time in New England, like, Edelman played strong for his size. And Julian's not the biggest guy. So I'd say there's a certain level of playing strength. There's a certain level of instinctiveness. There's a certain level of toughness. I would say in Welker's case, nobody was tougher than Wes Welker, and he had very good instincts on the inside part of the field, and he kind of developed those over time, and he was a reliable catcher. And then Tom did a good job of putting the ball on the frame of the receiver and just understanding, like, who you're throwing to. And then Wes had the ability to create separation in a short space. So if you're a shorter player or a smaller player, like, you have something that gives you the opportunity to kind of differentiate yourself from the others. Like Higgins and Noel are obviously different receivers. They're both productive receivers, and their skill sets are a little bit different, but in some respects, they have some similar qualities. They're able to create a little bit of space against tight covers. Ultimately, it comes down to your ability to create some space versus tight coverage. So how that, I would say, develops and evolves over time, we'll find out. There'll be some nuance involved. There's a coaching element involved. So there's a lot of things that go into being, you know, a good player. And if you have maybe an area that you're deficient, what do you have on the other side of it that you can help offset? And I'd say that applies to really all players. There's no quote unquote perfect player. They all have things that they can work on. They all have things that they can improve. And each player just has to try to maximize whatever they have to the best of their ability.
Nick, we sort of have an unofficial award on this show at the beginning of training camp. We gave it to Will Anderson last year, the Will Anderson body type change trophy that we give out. You know, who put on the most good weight room weight in the offseason, that kind of thing. My hope and prediction for this year is that trophy goes to Blake Fisher. How is Blake's offseason going, and how are you feeling about him going into year two?
Can we give it to D'Amico? I mean,
yeah, dude.
Seen him in the weight room lately.
He looks like he's put on some good weight room weight also. D'Amico.
I said this the other day. He would definitely beat my ass, so I'll try to avoid. But no, he looks good. Blake looks good. He's been here. I'll give you two other players, actually. So Ladarius Henderson has actually sort of reshaped his body. I think nobody's worked harder than LD. I know he lost his whole year last year because he was dealing with the foot injuries. But I think he's lost, 15 to 20 pounds of, body fat. And he wasn't, a heavy kid to begin with. It was just he wasn't able to do a lot. But I would say, the level of commitment and focus that he's shown, honest to God, it's a tremendous accomplishment. And I would say just looking at Kamari, he looks physically in his upper body a little bigger, a little thicker. That's what I'd say off-season program is for. And if you have an opportunity, if as a player you have an opportunity from February to April to really make some progress, in the end, this all goes back to work. What's your level of commitment? How committed are you to being a good football player? What's your level of want to? And there's no substitute for hard work. Not to oversimplify it. This goes back to the blockout example. It goes back to hard work, discipline, consistent, focused work. And I would say those are some players at this point that have shown that. We have a number of players that have done that. I think phase one, the voluntary program, we had 93, 94, 95% of the team that was here. So the most important thing is if you want to improve as a football player, how do you get better at football? You focus on your work and your individual development. And this is just really a starting point. It's only May. You still have May, June, July, and even when we're not here over the summer, those 4 to 6 weeks are vitally important. So a lot of players that have made a lot of progress to this point, hopefully they continue to make it over the course of the spring.
Nick Figgy's Nick Figgy's mad at you for bringing up the Cavs. He's a big Cavs fan, and he just texted me.
We're both from Cleveland.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. They've had a great year, but learn how to block out after a free throw, man. Come on.
Come on now.
Is there anybody or any of the undrafted rookie free agents, guys, that, I always like to adopt a UDFA per year. And then Sean writes them down and remembers them for me. Cause I'm a horrible adopted,
football parent.
I forget these kids. Yeah. They don't make the team. He's a deadbeat football parent, Nick. Is there a guy we should be keeping an eye on perhaps that you feel just has something to him?
It's a smaller group, but we feel like there's a couple guys in there that have an opportunity to potentially compete for some reps. I would say Tafuna, the defensive tackle from Utah, done some decent things, 6'3", 300 pounds. Good playing style, has some toughness to him, really good kid. And the receiver from Minnesota, I know, probably be an uphill battle there, but Jackson, he had a really good career. He kind of falls into the football player category. Maybe didn't run fast relative to some others, but really productive with his opportunities. He did a good job this year and then in years past as well. So those are a couple guys. I think we signed, what it was, 6 or 7, whatever it was, a smaller group. So hopefully those players come in here and that's all we ask them to do is compete and just try to create a little bit of a niche for themselves. But, excited for the group that's going to come in here tomorrow.
I was thinking, Nick, when we brought you on this morning at 7:30, I was thinking I can ask Nick if he's had a little downtime now that the draft is over. But, of course, you got the rookies coming in. And then there's this reminder that really GMs never sleep because there's a trade that gets announced at 5:45 this morning with the Cowboys, Pickens going to the Cowboys or whatever. I'm not going to ask you about that trade, but in general, is yours a 24-hour job? Can a trade – what's the weirdest time of night where you've ever consummated a deal?
Yeah, it's continued. I'd say free agency sometimes when crazy things happen.
Yeah.
I've been in a situation laying on a couch, and you're trying to go to bed, and your phone starts ringing at 1 o'clock in the morning. It's come on, people. let's deal with this tomorrow.
Yeah.
So, but – look, the reality is the role is continuous. You just kind of transition from one phase to the next. We finished up Saturday. Sunday, it was, an off day, if you will. And then, honestly, Monday, Tuesday, right after the draft, it felt like those 2 days were as busy as the week before. It's just kind of a different focus and attention in what you're working on. So our opportunity for sort of downtime comes over the summer. Once we finish up with the mandatory minicamp, then there'll kind of be a little bit of a break league-wide. Then that's the opportunity to really unwind and definitely try to take advantage of that. But I mean, that's the beauty of this job. So you're always kind of prepared for anything. And, you know, you try to be smart with your time, try to be efficient, try to maximize the day, and get as much out of it as you possibly can. So there'll be some things, I'm sure, that'll pop up here, at least from our perspective as well, team-wise. I mean, there might be an opportunity for us to add a player or two that we feel like would have a decent role. So that's part of the job. And, you know, you have to embrace that and you have to understand it. And you got a great, we have a great staff around us. So enjoy every aspect of it. And there's really no quote unquote downtime. It's just kind of, you shift the focus to a different area of work. And that's kind of where we are here in the offseason.
As long as they don't interrupt you while you're watching McAfee versus Gunther on Saturday night, right?
That's Saturday night. Okay. Yeah. How do we think that's going to go?
So, McAfee,
you know, scriptwriters think on that one?
Well,
yet,
you know, you can actually get action on this, Nick. I don't know if you knew that, but McAfee is a plus 800.
I'm not allowed to get action.
Plus 800. You're not, but I can. Plus 800. He's a plus 800 underdog in this thing against
Okay.
Gunther.
All right. Yeah. He might have a shot.
He might. I don't know.
Past Pat, so.
Gunther's a tough cat, man.
That sleeper hold, like, he looked like he took that one pretty well a week or so ago, whatever it was.
He did. Seth, you should see McAfee wrestle. He's actually really, really good. He's wrestling in a match.
He's a good athlete.
Yeah,
he'll tell you. Yeah, I mean,
didn't
really
he get put in a sleeper
athlete?
Hold? Yeah. Then he was doing his show the next day. So
yeah, he was able to recover from the sleeper hold. Yes, I like that, Nick. That you treat these wrestling injuries like they're real. God, he got up off the mat and he did
right
his,
back
did
up.
His show
yeah.
the next day. I love that.
Really like Edelman in that regard. Yeah,
that's it. All right, Nick. Well, we'll see you out there at practice on what, Friday and Saturday this week, right? The rookies are out there.
Can't wait. Look
yep.
forward to seeing you guys. Thanks for having
right,
us. Always
yep.
Always enjoy it.
Always enjoy the time. Appreciate it, Nick. Thanks.
Thanks, guys.
Yep, good stuff. Nick Caserio, Texans GM. All right, he gave us some stuff to sink our teeth into. How about the players? How about Ladarius Henderson popping up on the radar at the end of that
yeah,
interview right there?
You know what? Ladarius Henderson, we've probably under-discussed him as a wild card factor in the O-line race just because he's a seventh-round pick. You know, obviously had a very good college career at Michigan. Has this dual-foot injury.
He got caught and came back. You know what I
yeah,
mean?
Yeah, like, he got caught, came
caught
back. And so there's he's intriguing. I should at least mention him more often.
Yeah.
I'm not banking on him. For multiple reasons, and yeah, there's intrigue there, and a lot of people are curious about it.
Yep.
The way, you know what? And it's not Ladarius Henderson's fault. It's all the people that will come to me and say, "Hey, he was an All-American on a national championship team." I'm like, yeah, so are a lot of guys that never play in the NFL at all.
Yeah.
So that's not his fault that people bring that up. It's people being stupid about college awards and being on a national championship team.
Yep.
You know what that really bothers me, Sean?
Why?
We had a guy, it was like in 2003 or 2004, he had won a national championship at LSU, or however the asterisks on that one went. And, but he was like the sixth defensive tackle on the depth.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Optimize your nutrition this year with Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal service. Factor's fresh, never frozen meals are dietitian approved, ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from 40 weekly options across 8 dietary preferences like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Eat smarter at factormeals.com/listen50 and use code LISTEN50 for 50% off plus free shipping on your first box. Factormeals.com/listen50. Code LISTEN50.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period.
That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available if at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Chart there.
Yeah.
He was basically signed as an undrafted free agent. As a favor to somebody on the team, like as a kind of like yeah, here we go, or somebody on the team granted him a favor because his dad was somebody. This kid walked around the locker room wearing his national championship ring.
No,
and oh yeah, my God. yeah, and I mean, he was awful.
Even if he was good, that violates the rules of wearing your national championship ring.
No. He was bad in every, like, he was right. Horrible personality, horrible football player. Was on the team as a favor to the guy's daddy or uncle or something.
Right.
Just to be able to say that he was in a camp somewhere.
Yeah. But even
and
if
he wore his, and then, yeah, and even if he was a, it'd be like if a Heisman Trophy winner came strolling into the locker room with his Heisman Trophy. Like, okay, you actually did something, but what the hell are you doing?
Yeah. Yeah, because those rings are, like, once you get them, those are special occasion only type of things. You don't walk around, like, going to the grocery store with your Super Bowl or national championship ring on, right?
I don't know. That's probably up to the individual. Yeah.
Yeah. But
it's a nice trinket to have out leaning on the bar, you know, if you're a young single guy.
Yeah, yeah. What should the rules be about wearing your national championship ring around? That's what I want to know.
Of all the ways to peacock at a bar, I would say
that's pretty good.
That's an acceptable one. Sets you apart.
Yeah. That's a really good one for sure. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you. That was Texans GM Nick Caserio. If you missed the interview, you've got the rewind feature and the podcast to go find it. We always appreciate how generous he is with his time. All right, so let's circle back. There were a couple things I jotted down that I want to revisit with Nick, and a couple of them have to do with the offensive line. So we will do that. I'm sure you'll hear bits and pieces of that interview on the station throughout the show the rest of the day as well. Stay there. You're listening to Payne and Pendergast. All right, takeaways from the Nick Caserio interview. He had a lot of thoughts about how they moved in the draft and philosophies on that and things like that at the beginning of the interview. I thought, Seth, you came the closest to getting an answer about drafting for need out of him. It's almost like the Fonz, who back in the day, kids, there was this character on Happy Days named the Fonz, who was the coolest guy on TV. But part of his coolness was he would never apologize for anything. And he couldn't shape his mouth to say the word sorry. You know what I mean? Like, he'd be like, I am. I don't think Nick will ever say the word need. But I thought you got him the closest to admitting that there does reach a point, like there reaches at the very least a tiebreaker.
Acknowledging that you have certain needs on your roster.
Used an extreme example to do so, but I felt like you've gotten the closest to doing it. That was a success.
This is what happens. When GMs hear drafting for need, it's the worst version of drafting for need is if you're reaching for players all over the place.
Right.
And if you're taking guys way – if you're passing up – 10 guys who are graded better than this guy just because you desperately need a guard or something. And I think the vast majority of GMs would like to think that they don't do that. Maybe they do it every now and then. So I think that's why he gets agitated by when people asking him draft for need questions at times. I do think, and I just thought we'd already spent too much time on it, but I wish I guess the other hypothetical I would have asked is, all right, if you get to that spot where you've got a bunch of guys that are equally graded, but you know, three of them are guys where you don't feel like you have a desperate need. Is that when you're more likely to trade back?
Yeah.
And I'm guessing he probably didn't want to give up much on that, but I think he agreed that you do acknowledge at least if I've got two guys that are graded equally the same, and one of them is in a position of need, yeah, that might tip the scales over towards that guy.
His answer to that follow-up would have been, everything is on the table. You know, we look at everything, and we make the most of our opportunities, et cetera. Yeah.
I think most teams, like the hypothetical I gave is ridiculous, but if you had three all-pro wide receivers on the team, and you get to a spot in the draft where the top three graded guys are all wide receivers, you're probably going to try to trade back, Like, you just – so – because you still have guys that you could like and could play for your team immediately. So hopefully one day the Texans will have three all pro.
That would be phenomenal. Yeah, yeah, I think we're feeling they had a shot at something like that.
It's
last
actually not
year.
Even possible, right? Are you only allowed to have two?
There's only two first all-pro team all-pro. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, second team. So two first teams and one second team.
There you go. There you go. Boy, and I guess that would mean CJ's first team all-pro too. The question I asked him about Titus being tackle or guard, obviously that has not been determined yet, and it sounds like this training camp could be a fascinating experiment of constant shuffling until they find the group that they like. That's the way I heard it. Is like, we got centers that can play guard, we got guards that can play center, we got tackles that can play guard, and it doesn't sound like they're determining anything until these guys actually put pads on, which tells me that Titus Howard could be a tackle and a guard at the same practice if they're still experimenting with all this stuff. You know?
I think Nick is higher on Titus as a guard than the public at large in general.
At least in his press conference answers, he is for sure.
Yeah, well, yeah. No, and I thought Titus last year, in kind of embracing it for the first time, he did some things in the run game that I thought were really, really promising and encouraging. He's just a large human being who moves well, just getting a body on a body and creating space, including in that Kansas City game, that I think that he's the guy that the Texans feel most comfortable if they have to play him at tackle, then he's going to play a tackle if he can play a guard. With some of the other guys, you know, even like Laken Tomlinson at left guard, he's only played left guard in the NFL, and he's an older guy. They're probably more nervous, or I guess maybe a little bit more careful about moving him to right guard than they are at flip-flopping Titus back and forth between guard and tackle.
Yep. What did you think of his answer when I asked him about the install of the offense with all the shuffling on the offensive line going on? My expectation was, the gist of my question about that was, it would seem that that's going to make it more difficult, that you're trying to find your five best guys while also installing a brand new offense, but he thought it made it easier because everybody's starting from ground zero, I guess.
Yeah, and I think that there's a little bit of, you can teach everything from day one, and your veterans actually have to be engaged during meetings instead of zoning out. There's very much a feel of, okay, they tore the offensive line down except for the young guys and Titus, and you're going to build it back up with Nick Caley's scheme. Nick Caley's the big thing, and I think this obviously ended up being a huge issue, was that Bobby Slowik was a first-time offensive coordinator who really didn't have a whole lot of experience in teaching any specific position, and certainly not in designing and implementing a run game. And he was working with an offensive line coach who was also unfamiliar with Bobby Slowik's upbringing and background and all the terminology and techniques and everything that went with it. So there's a big disconnect there. And then whatever the various veteran players had from their backgrounds, it was just disjointed. It was very, very disjointed. Having Popovich and Caley and Caserio to a degree, all having a common background and having worked with each other before, I think that hopefully the onboarding process is a lot smoother, and that you just get competent play from a technique and mental standpoint. Because last year there were just too many times where it was obvious that guys weren't on the same page. The running back and the offensive tackle weren't doing the same thing in pass protection. There were the offensive tackle was leaving the edge rusher completely unblocked as the running back was blocking inside as well. It, like, all these things that were just bad fundamental play from a mental and technique standpoint that I think are going to be better this year.
Are you optimistic that Caley's background as a tight ends coach can help improve this tight ends room?
You have to be careful with that, just because, I mean, the talent is the talent, and having background as a tight ends coach, I'll tell you one thing. When Mike Munchak, I think, was one of the best offensive line coaches this century. When he became the head coach of the Titans, the offensive line, you know, play was not nearly the same as when he was the position coach. So for one, it's not like the tight ends coach becoming a coordinator means that the tight ends are going to be coached by him. But then there's also the actual players involved, and it's not like he all of a sudden turned Tyler Higbee into an awesome blocker or anything when he was a tight ends coach there. I think the players are the players. Does he I think it's a matter of limiting Dalton Schultz as a blocker more so than all of a sudden transforming Dalton Schultz into a good blocker.
Yeah, and that's more of an OC thing, you know, putting Dalton in position to succeed.
Well, I, you know, like defensively, if you look at Henry Toa-Toa, like, do I think Henry Toa-Toa is ever going to be brilliant in pass coverage? I'm doubtful that he will be.
Yeah.
But if he's your will linebacker, you got to figure out exactly how to limit his exposure, what he can and can't do. And then Henry Toa-Toa just needs to continue working on the stuff that, that you can do well, and the leverage that you take, reading and anticipating routes, knowing exactly your zones, all of that. So it's, all right, how do we manage these players that we have? And that's one of the challenges this year with Henry Toa-Toa. Likewise with the tight ends. I don't expect that Dalton Schultz all of a sudden for the first time in his career is going to be an awesome blocker.
Right.
But I know that he can be an asset as a receiver. Cade Stover's the guy that I hope really pours it on and really clicks for him, because he's only played tight end for a few years in his life at this point.
And he's the one whose skill set has a chance to keep him on the field, whether it's a blocking situation or a pass catching situation.
Yeah.
He's got that type of skill set.
And then don't forget Luke Lachey. Intriguing. I think he'll probably be on the practice squad for most of this year, but he's an Iowa tight end. Greater than 50% of Iowa tight ends who get drafted end up being productive NFL players.
Yep.
They're not all Sam Laportas. They're not all George Kittles, obviously. But they have a history of producing guys with good.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country. And the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company, from America for America.
Hey everyone, summer is just around the corner and May's packed with reasons to celebrate. Whether you're firing up the grill for a backyard barbecue, soaking up the sun by the pool, or enjoying a long weekend with friends and family, Whole Foods Market makes it easy to kick off the season with great everyday prices on high quality favorites, from fresh produce to grilling essentials. Let's dive into the savings and get your summer fun started right. Personally, I love how easy Whole Foods Market makes it to pull together a last-minute gathering. I was there recently picking up a few things for a cookout, and those yellow low-price signs are no joke. I grabbed their No Antibiotics Ever Ground Turkey and a few 365 by Whole Foods Market Organic Salad Kits. Honestly, so convenient and surprisingly affordable. The quality is still everything you'd expect, but I definitely felt like I was scoring a deal, which I love. Plus those yellow sale signs, I make a beeline for them now. Especially when I saw strawberries on sale, we went through 2 cartons in one day. Save on May celebrations with great everyday prices at Whole Foods Market.
Dollar Shave Club is the real grooming MVP. Their 6-blade razor gives you the closest, most comfortable shave. The 4-blade features swift rinse tech for longer, thicker hair. And the handle has a no-slip 360-degree diamond pattern grip for comfort and control. Shave butter works great with their razors. It's translucent for precision and delivers a long-lasting glide that hydrates the skin. Visit DollarShaveClub.com/homerun and use code HOMERUN for 20% off your order of $20 or more. Plus free shipping. Whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
How can advertising on TikTok help jumpstart sales for your small business?
Thanks to TikTok ads, I was able to open up a business with my childhood friend, get a warehouse, and even hire employees. My name is Julian, and I am one of the founders of The Snacks Lab. We are an exotic snack company. We had over $100,000 in sales from our TikTok ads in the first month. So our orders went from 5 a day to over 250 orders a day. You definitely have to use TikTok ads, and you gotta start now.
Head over to getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads.
If you're a parent or share a fridge with someone, Instacart is about to make grocery shopping so much easier. Because with family carts, you can share a cart with your partner and each add the items you want. Since between the two of you, odds are you'll both remember everything you need. And this way, you'll never have to eat milkless cereal again. So minimize the stress of the weekly shop with family carts. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first 3 orders. Service fees apply for 3 orders in 14 days. Excludes restaurants.
Fundamentally sound tight end techniques and abilities.
There's a chance to make the team in that room right now. That room right now is Dalton Schultz is going to be on the team, obviously. He's got 2 years of an expensive contract left. They love Cade Stover, even though he was very up and down as a rookie and he finished the season on the injured list. I mean, Brevin Jordan has done some good things as a tight end here, but he's on a one-year deal and he gets hurt all the time. You know, yeah. Like there's like if you're just trying to look at seventh round picks around the league and you go, okay, Iowa tight end on a team where there's issues in the tight end room, and he's got a pedigree too. His dad was Jim Lachey, who played offensive line in the NFL for a number of years. So
he's a hog.
He was a hog in Washington for the Redskins yeah. back in the day. So so Luke Lachey is presumably coming into the building with at least some sort of working knowledge through his dad of how he's supposed to conduct himself. You know, yeah. like the ramp up time should be less for him. You know what? I don't think that's a bad long shot bet for making
well,
the team.
Well, there have been 14 tight ends drafted out of Iowa in the Kirk Ferentz era, including C.J. Fedorowicz. C.J. Fedorowicz was kind of I had gone through this. I don't have the stats in front of me. I went through all the tight ends that have been drafted in the first through seventh round, and it was more than 50% of them had viable NFL careers. Yeah. Fedorowicz was a guy that I kind of, you know, I didn't quite know to put him in the viable segment or not, because he only ended up playing 4 or 5 years, but he did have that. He had a year where he had 54 catches with the Texans. 2016, he had 54 catches.
Yeah, concussions are really what got him. Like he.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
he had a bunch of concussions. So there's people on the text page talking about your I guess a teammate at the time that was wearing their championship ring yeah. around the room.
He was wearing his LSU championship ring around as a guy that was just trying to lord it over us as evidence that he was a stud football player. And he was awful.
He was undrafted, yeah. right? Is that what you said?
He was undrafted, and yeah. I don't think he even played much at LSU, but he was a defensive lineman in name, at least.
It was an offensive lineman. There's somebody asking. Someone's asking if it was Dominic Davis.
He was a defensive lineman. And right. Dominic Davis was really, really good yeah. until injuries caught up to him. Yeah.
Yep. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. All right, we'll circle back to some of what Nick had to say in the 9 o'clock hour. Let's circle back to the Rockets here. Draymond Green, Draymond Green is annoying. His most annoying personality, though, the most annoying version of him, to me, popped up on an interview on his podcast, I should say, yesterday. The respect gatekeeper, Draymond Green, talking about various Houston Rockets. We will get to that coming up next. All right, I am told by Brandon Scott, our digital guru, that the full Nick Caserio interview, which went about 45 minutes, will be up on the station YouTube before the end of our show as its own entity, and it'll be obviously on the Odyssey app and the podcast page and the station YouTube all by the end of the show today. So if you missed it, that's where you'll be able to find it. Nice chat with the Texans GM. The other name, you mentioned Ladarius Henderson, Seth, that was a name that Nick volunteered as someone. When we asked him about who's got the biggest body type changes in the weight room,
yeah.
I said I'm hoping that it's Blake Fisher. And he complimented Blake Fisher, but then volunteered Ladarius Henderson and then Kamari Lassiter. He said Kamari Lassiter has been getting after it in the weight room, and it's been noticeable this offseason.
Kamari, and he will use scary. That. He will use that for evil purposes as well.
Yes.
Kamari likes to use every bit of body mass.
Bad intentions with that
people.
Guy.
A lot of people protested. 97. One of my Twitter followers protested and said that when I tweeted out that Ladarius Henderson had one of the most impressive physique transformation, or one of the most. He said, "Where have we heard that line before?" Kenyon Green. Perhaps body change isn't a good barometer. Well, look, I didn't say he was going to be all pro.
No.
But secondly, I'll remind you that Will Anderson won our award last offseason for best physique transformation.
Yes.
So, could you just try not to pee on any bit of good news ever and always?
Thank
like,
you.
Oh, hey, here's something nice to say about somebody.
Yep.
Don't go a miserable way to go through life. That's my job.
Yeah,
I get paid to do that.
That's right. Yeah, don't go through life like that.
Don't pile on.
Right. Yeah. Right. Right. Right.
Through my phone. Damn it. Hold on a second.
Okay, I'm gonna get to this Draymond Green here. We'll circle back to some of what Nick Caserio had to say in the 9 o'clock hour, and we'll get back to the Texans. Top of the hour, Seth went and found negative anonymous executive and anonymous scout reviews prior to the draft. On Texans draft picks. So we'll see how's this make us feel about some of these draft picks? Draymond Green, I want to play this audio and see what you think about it here, Seth. Draymond Green, the respect gatekeeper, and you're going to see what I mean by that in just a second. Here's Draymond Green. He talks about multiple Rockets on his podcast that he does with Baron Davis. They recorded their latest episode, I believe, yesterday. This is when all the video dropped. And he said he has got no respect for Dylan Brooks walking off the court without shaking hands after Game 7.
Dylan Brooks ran off the court. So when I say you see what guys is made of, he ran off the court like ain't shake nobody up. And you admitted that you was trying to hurt Steph's hand, which, again, fine by me, bro. Like, I get it. We all get it when you hoop. You know what I'm saying? So if you're going to be on that type of time,
he got to be on that time all
in the press
he gotta
conference.
He got to be on that time all the time.
You're going to be talking. You're going to be Mr. Big Bad Wolf. Don't lose and then not face the music. Don't be that guy because, again, you lose a lot of respect for guys in that moment. I had a moment with Dylan Brooks back when he was with Memphis, and I said the dynasty start after you. And the reason I said that is because things like that. Because, bro, so then guess what? Then Tari Eason do it. He lead the court.
Okay, so that last – we'll get to Tari in a second. That last part obviously means Tari's following a veteran. Tari looks at Dylan and says, that's how he's doing it. That's how I'm going to do it.
I know, for the life of me, I've never understood people get upset about anybody not like, in professional sports. Like, we're not lining up in line like Little League kids slapping hands, you know, and then we all go to McDonald's afterwards. Like, if a guy wants to leave the court, so be it.
Yeah.
Guys, you know what people really, really want out of their athletes is guys who don't get upset
shake
after
hands
losses.
After a loss.
People always say, like, you'd much rather take a guy that's just so pissed off that he leaves immediately than that he's going to stay around and pal around and laugh
with
and
Draymond
act like
nothing Green of all people. With Draymond.
Yeah, and Draymond being the guy that's going to try to call somebody out for a lack of sportsmanship, he's one of the least sportsman-like people in the history of sports.
He's the dirtiest player in the NBA right now.
He's Ty Cobb, who doesn't wear spikes only because they won't allow it.
Right.
Yeah, like there's what the hell are you talking about, Draymond Green?
Yeah,
Draymond Green does not get taken seriously in calling out anybody else's sportsmanship.
Yep.
And I will lose zero minutes of sleep over this and whether or not Dylan Brooks is a good enough sport.
Well, the good news is as Draymond mentioned Tari at the end there, you know, boy, Tari was about to go down that same road as that same gruesome path as Dylan Brooks, but Draymond Green was able to go save Tari Eason.
I ended up catching him right before he was about to walk out the arena, and he was like, he was walking this way, so he didn't have to come by me, but I could, in my distance, I could see him right there. I said to him, I like waved him down, and I went and I dapped him up, and that was kind of a little save, but don't be that guy, man. Like, you don't,
you gotta teach him. You gotta teach him.
You lose a series.
You gotta teach him, right. Yeah.
But that's who Dylan Brooks is, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And we understand, like, you a sucker, man. You like, but Tari Eason, he not. You know what I'm saying? And like I said, his mind was talking. It's all love. I don't get off into that. I got a lot of love for young fella because the way he go about his business, the way he play the game, I got a lot of love for him. Don't be like that because you lose respect. When guys lose respect for you in this league, like, it don't matter and it's going to catch you in the end.
Does Draymond think that the rest of the league just has massive respect for the way he goes about his business, you know, like
he's got to be the most hated or most despised guy in the league,
I would think.
And just fan base to fan base.
Yeah,
nobody likes the way he conducts his business, and nobody likes the way the NBA puts up with all of it,
right?
And that his go to move is, and he's not even like he's a very good defender yet. Like, don't act like you're the tough guy of the NBA when your go to move is the nut kick.
Yeah.
I like you flail and nut kick and do stuff like that. And you're not okay, oh yeah, but I dap guys up after the game and we can all pretend we're friends on our podcasts and everything.
Yeah.
No, like, dude, like the NBA players used to hate each other. They used to just hate
it was
each
fun,
other.
Man.
It wasn't, and there was nothing wrong with that. There's no, you don't get extra points for sportsmanship. No, what Draymond's doing here is classically what a lot of vile people do, which is they try to amp up some positive part of their personality to deflect the attention away from the really objectionable parts of their personality. some of the people, the types of people who donate a boatload of money to their church or what have you, because they're desperately worried that somebody's going to find out about all the other stuff they do in life, or because they feel guilty about it. Yeah. No, I'm not buying. Oh, Draymond wants guys to dap each other up. Oh, I got to rethink exactly what I, what I know about Draymond. Gosh.
After series that he just won, why did he not come over after we just beat them? Yeah. And shake my hand like, okay, man.
The point of that is evidence that you're better than this guy, because it's what it is, right? Hey, here's another guy that a lot of people don't like, and they think that he's a dirty dude or a bad guy.
Yep.
I'll just make myself look better than him.
Yeah.
And then people will feel better about me. Yeah.
I thought Vanessa Richardson, sideline reporter for the Rockets, summed this up great. She retweeted the video of that audio we just played of Draymond Green calling Dylan Brooks a sucker and saying nobody respects him. She said, I know the man who hit Mike Conley's already broken face so hard he had to have metal implants, who punched his own teammate, Jordan Poole, who poked James Harden's eye, who took a shot to Dante Exum's throat, who hit LeBron in the groin, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, is not talking about sportsmanship, right? That's a great tweet. That is a great tweet. Here's Draymond Green on Alperen Şengün.
Şengün? Got a lot of respect for him. You know, I've played against a lot of guys, and I always tell people, man, in a playoff series, one of two things happen. You either completely lose respect for someone or you gain a lot of respect for someone, because you see who really real and when these playoffs happen. You know what I'm saying? You see a lot of people fade. You get to see who really real. You also get to see how people act after the game, which we'll talk about. But Şengün real, man, he ain't back down at all. What I would say to him, if I was his OG, and he can take it right from here, flop a little less, embellish a little less, because with a defender like me, he doing that, my feet off that.
Okay. Mm. Yeah, flop a little. Not now. I don't think that's horrible advice for Şengün, honestly. Like, my advice wouldn't be about the flopping with Şengün. My advice would be about the, when you miss a shot, turning and screaming at the referee while the ball's going back the other way. That was a heavy criticism of Şengün that I saw from people who were critical of him in this postseason was, hey, man, just missing shots is not optimal, but you're only compounding the issue when you miss the shot and then distract attention from the matter at hand by going over and waving your arms at the referee. Like, why didn't you call that? Like, yeah, ball's going back the other way, young man. You got to get back on defense right now.
What's, Draymond Green is a guy that, I just don't enjoy listening to him at all. There's some guys, people I dislike, who I actually enjoy listening to because they're good at speaking or what have you.
Yeah.
Draymond, it just makes me cringe every time I hear his voice. I don't, whenever he says positive things about Rockets players, people will always blow it up on social media and everything. And I'm like, don't give him that respect.
No, that's
like, don't allow Draymond to act like he's one of the venerable heads of state of the league or something.
That's
like,
the
no,
big thing.
He's
yeah.
not that.
That's why I played that. I'm like, it wasn't that, ooh, Draymond saying positive things about Şengün. Oh, my God, he got the seal of Draymond approval. It's the ludicrousness of Draymond viewing himself as some sort of gatekeeper to the ultimate respect crypt somewhere. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, that's like, who cares what your view of respect is? You kick people in the junk on the regular in NBA games. Stupid. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you as we head into the 9 o'clock hour. We talked earlier in the program with Nick Caserio about some of the rookies on the Texans. Rookie class arrives in town. I think he said tomorrow they start practicing on Friday over at the Methodist Training Center. What did some of the anonymous scouts say prior to the draft about the Texans rookies? And can we refute these? Does it make us feel any different about this rookie class, which I think we're, by and large, pretty positive about? We'll do that. We'll go through that exercise here in the 9 o'clock hour, coming up next.
Anyone who loves playing baseball or softball knows that one of the first steps in that journey is breaking in your first glove. It's where your love of the game began. Where does your child's baseball or softball journey begin? Go to playball.org to get started. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Knicks Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Knicks, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Knicks Menswear, your friend in style.
I'm Emma Greed, and I've spent the last 20 years building, running, and investing in some incredible businesses. The more success I've had, the more people started coming to me with questions. How do you start a business? How do you raise money? How do I bounce back from failure? On my new podcast, Aspire with Emma Greed, I'll be answering these questions and more through weekly conversations with the smartest minds out there. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Audacy podcast, available now, wherever you get your podcasts.